look it up. All right, welcome back. It's Jared and Cameron's weekly sports podcast. We're back after a long break. It was a good time, but we're happy to be back on the podcast. And we're happy because it's such a really big sports time. We have the football season at the real climax. Just great playoffs. A few good weeks of playoff games. We got the MLB season beginning to shape up. Teams are, you know, filling their rosters, getting ready for spring training. And basketball's in that time period where teams are really making a push before the All-Star break. However, yesterday was a big day because the Baseball Hall of Fame was announced, and it elected four new members. Mariano Rivera obviously was going to get in, but he did get 100%. And what do you think that means, Cameron?
Well, personally, growing up a Yankee fan, it's kind of crazy that there's never been a 100% guy. But I think, to be honest, Mo is the greatest reliever of all time. You could make the case that he's one of the best pitchers of all time. Great human being, had no one dislike him at all. So I definitely think that, you know, he's just the type of person to get that 100%, because there's no real argument against him getting in. Besides saying, oh, I want to put another guy on the ballot. But even this year, there wasn't another guy on the ballot.
With Willie Mays isn't 100%, then Mariano surely isn't. You know, what I think is one of the best things in sports is when you know what one team is going to do, they know that you know you're going to do it, and you do it anyway. And Mariano's cutter, everyone knew he was going to throw it. It wasn't like, he broke off a curve after, you know, he had hard fastball, curve. No, he's throwing the cutter, see if you can hit it. And no one could ever hit it.
That pitch.
It's, you know, one of the most truly unbelievable pitchers I think we've ever seen.
What I think is truly incredible about his career is at the age of 42, shagging fly balls in Kansas City, you know, messes up his ankle.
His knee,
he turned his ACL, right? Literally crying in the outfield as the cart pulls him off the field, and he goes, "This isn't my ending." And the next year, he comes back and has 44 saves at the age of 43 after just tearing his ACL. He didn't have his first save until he was 25 or 26, I think. That's insane. So in an 18-year period,
just soaking so much.
652 saves. Literally the greatest achievement, you know, that I think it's one of the greatest achievements that I think is like not as recognized in sports history, because, you know, saves, people look at, well, if you're on the best team, you know, you can get the most saves, and it's not a great stat, but if you think about it, being able to come out and pitch the last inning for 18 years to 20 years and throw a 1-2-3 inning, or, you know, have a sub 1 ERA in the postseason, that's incredible.
It's, you know, really remarkable. And one of the things that I think he's the best guy to be the first to get 100%. Now, Roy Halladay, he is the somber part of the day because, you know, unfortunately he passed away a year ago and in a really terrible accident that nobody's going to forget. And yesterday they were saying he is the first guy other than Roberto Clemente since Christy Mathewson to get in first ballot and have passed away.
Yeah, not been alive.
So it's really tough, but I don't think that should take away anything from what he did on the mound. He was really a special pitcher.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And last night we were having this argument. I don't think Roy Halladay is a first ballot Hall of Famer if he didn't pass away. And I'm not taking anything against him. I still think he's a Hall of Famer, maybe like Mussina is. He's a Hall of Famer later on in the ballot taking. But, you know, it's for me to, discount his stuff, I'm not trying to discount him at all. Great person on the mound, most dominant pitcher in baseball for 10 years, as well as being a great teammate. Like, I don't think that's ever going to be an unknown. One of the only pitchers to throw a no-hitter in the postseason, him and Whitey Ford.
Don Larson. Don Larson threw the perfect game against Brooklyn.
All right, my fault.
No worries.
My bad.
Set. My thing with Halliday is that I think he, when you're the best pitcher for 10 years, it's a lock. You're an automatic Hall of Famer. Do I think that potentially the accident definitely make him a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yeah,
I think it added a little bit to 85%. However, I do think he would have gotten in regardless. I think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer in pretty much every person's eyes. Our third inductee was, with the same percentage as Halliday, Edgar Martinez, his 10th and final year on the ballot. I thought, you know, I was really happy to see him get in because he'd waited so long. He had to live through the people who didn't really look at statistics the way that people look at him now. On-base percentage is a really big statistic, and his on-base percentage is just through the roof.
You know, I always wondered, you know, just 5-6 years ago, I would look at his stats, 500 home runs. How are you not in the Hall of Fame with those stats? How are you not, you know, considered a Hall of Famer, 500 home runs, 2,000 plus hits, and also...
You're talking about Edgar Martinez?
Yeah. He has four...
Edgar doesn't have 500.
I think you're thinking about
McGriff. McGriff has 493.
Yeah, I am.
Don't worry.
Either way, the
one of the best hitters in the second half of the 90s, early part of the 2000s.
And here's the way that we have to look at the Hall of Fame. You know, I want to bring this up with you, just overall looking at the Hall of Fame. I've made two omissions today. You know, are we going to start counting Hall of Famers as players who were the best DH, the best player at their position for 10 years? Because let's look at Edgar. He didn't start starting at third base until he was 27 years old. And that's pretty old. That's like, let's say Aaron Judge for 10 years hits 30-plus home runs every single season. Right? He hits 300 home runs. Maybe in his total career he has about 400. Do we sit there and go, he's a Hall of Famer because he was the best right fielder in the game for 10 years? How do we look at that?
I think that, first of all, let me just separate DH and reliever. I think those have to be special. Edgar Martinez is special. I'm not putting in Nelson Cruz because he was the best DH of the last few years. You need to be above and beyond. Mariano Rivera, Trevor Hoffman, two relievers who have gotten in recently. I think it's a very long time till we see another relief pitcher. The last relief pitcher before Hoffman, I don't think Billy Wagner gets in. The last reliever before Hoffman, probably Eckersley, Gossage. Exactly. Eckersley, Gossage, yeah. Suter, but it was a long era ago. I think those two positions are different. I think you have to be the best at your position, pretty much, unless, you know, there's another Hall of Famer, like, you know, if Mookie Betts moves to center field and continues what he's doing, and Trout continues what he's doing. Okay, Mookie Betts may not be better than Trout, but he's still a Hall of Famer. I think that's okay. I think one of the most interesting things is, you know, I think you have to be top 10 in your position all time, top 15 about. You know, of course, there's going to be more people, but, you
to
know.
Be a Hall of Famer, you have to be top 15.
I think you have to be top 10, top 15
okay.
all time in your position.
Besides pitchers, because there's tons of pitchers in the game. But let's talk about Mussina now, because that's like a perfect segue. Is Mussina, you know, a Hall of Famer? I think he's a Hall of Famer. I put him on my ballot.
Mussina's a Hall of Famer. I would vote for Mike Mussina. I definitely would vote for Mike Mussina. I just think that the Hall of Fame isn't, you know, people always talk about, what's the Hall of Fame for? Is it for the Walter Johnsons, the Pedro Martinezes of the world? Or is it for the, you know, the next tier, the Burt Blylevens? You know, where do we find the line? And Mike Mussina, I don't think, is close to the line. I think he's a for sure Hall of Famer. But I can see why people, because he wasn't the best.
He wasn't the best.
But he was consistent.
You know, he was consistent. And something I look at, too, is I'm seeing all these posts on Instagram and on Twitter, and they're just talking about how Mike Mussina had 5 solid pitches. He's the definition of a pitcher. If you look at him from that standpoint, good curveball, had a fastball when he was younger, you know. He could always locate, and think about it. whenever I see a player pitch for 15 years plus with under a 4 ERA in all of those years, that's special. I know you're sitting there going, oh, under 4 ERA, that's nothing crazy. You just have to give up 2 earned runs in less than 5 innings. Like, yeah, but 2 earned runs in 5 innings. But, you know, I see Mussina as a Hall of Famer because, you know, he wasn't in error with elite pitchers and elite, you know, bullpen too. And he was a guy too, like Holiday, where he wouldn't be able to back down. He was a workhorse. He was a mad bum. He we can talk about his greatest game, 2003 ALCS Red Sox Yankees. You know, Yankees are down 4-0. He comes in at the time, pitches 3 scoreless innings, and they basically cut the lead back to when he's scoring. When they cut the lead back when he's pitching, you know, gets a ground. There's a man on first and third, gets a inning-ending double play in the fourth inning, and you know, I just find him as a.
No, don't worry.
No, don't worry, Natasha.
Don't worry at all.
No. No, we didn't eat lunch. I think someone else did. Need help? No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Thank you.
This is what his stash is.
Good to know. Oh, man. See you soon, Natasha.
I'm not going to practice today.
Is that what they're talking about?
I don't want to go to practice.
All right. What's your take on Mike Mussina?
I think Peter Gammon said yesterday that it was a great, you know, in their final, like, takeaways, it was a great day for consistency. Yeah. Mariano Rivera, every day you'd go out there and you'd think, okay, this game is over. Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, things happen. He loses a game. That's expected from everyone. Mike Mussina, year in and year out, was amazing. Was a very, very good pitcher. A guy you want. You want Mike Mussina in your rotation. He may not have his best year, may not be like Kershaw, but he's going out there every fifth day. He's going to give you as good as he's got every single day, and pretty much whatever he gave you was gave you a chance to win. And I think that's really remarkable.
You know, this Hall of Fame ballot, I think, changes. You know, it's gonna be the start of a slow change of the way the baseball writers view the ballot, because Edgar got in, right? Edgar got in, and because Edgar got in, you know, he's basically a guy that's gonna be consistent all the time, and he's gonna represent consistency and something important in the game. You know, you always need a guy to be consistent. And to be honest, too, like I sit there and I think, like, I think Mussina really does change it, too, because, you know, now we're going to be, I think they're going to start electing people in the game, like Roy Holiday, who were the best pitcher in the game for 10 years, but, or like 8 years, but they weren't, you know, they didn't have 250 wins. They didn't have 4,000 strikeouts. You know, and I say that's a benchmark. I say 4,000 strikeouts and 250 wins is 300 wins is a benchmark. He's about, CC's about to get 250. I find that as a benchmark. But now that the game's changing, maybe it's more on, you know, the consistency of a player for a long amount of time, despite, like, how long their career was.
I actually kind of disagree. I think that voters will look at peaks. I think that they'll look at, you need 7 or so years of amazing peak. If you're dominant for a few years, I think that'll really do something for these voters. They want somebody who can go in and, you know, just dominate, just be amazing for a few years. Because
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, it's less though, getting away from benchmarks and more
benchmarks. I don't think they matter. I don't think benchmarks matter. I don't think you need 250, you know, I don't think 250 wins even guarantees you anything. Because I think that there's this term that's been, you know, floated around for a while, you know, a stat compiler. And, you know, you said strikeouts and wins, and those are two compiled stats. Yep. If you pitch long enough and you, you know, are a good pitcher, you will get those statistics. Does that mean that you were by far and away the best pitcher for every, you know, for a certain amount of years? No. You know, I'm not saying that Johan Santana is better than CC Sabathia. However, Johan Santana had a streak of about 5 years that's better than any 5 years of CC. He was the best pitcher in the American League for about 3 or 4 years, undoubtedly.
Here's where I look at that. And you talk about best pitcher. But how about we talk about, like, a career where he pitches, you know, 6 to 8 years of being the second best pitcher in the AL, right? Signing with
three
the
Yankees. 3 to 8 is a very long range. I 3 as you're the second best pitcher.
Yeah, because then
three, you can have 3
then
years.
You could say, like, yeah, see, this is where it gets tough. And I'm going to ask Jared a question about how the ballot should change in about a second. But this is how we have to question the ballot now, because it's so selective. You know, it's crazy. I'm surprised, just thinking about it, I'm just surprised that Bonds and Schilling weren't on the ballot and other guys didn't have higher amount of votes. I'm just surprised it was so spread out. Like, I don't know how...
That you either are in or not?
Yeah, I just don't understand that, like, Andy Pettit gets 10%, but then Bonds, it's just so frustrating to me. It's just like, how are you writing your ballot? It's so confusing. How do you think the ballot should be changed? And right now, I'll just give a little overview of the ballot. The ballot is, you're on the ballot for 10 years. If you don't get more than 5% on any year, you're basically kicked out. You're not allowed, you're not going to be on the ballot again next year.
Then you would... move to the Veterans Committee.
Yeah, move to the Veterans Committee. But then once that's over, something also, we'll talk about the Veterans Committee too. Like, that's crazy. Like, if I had a choice of Lance Berkman and someone else, you know, and people voted for Lance Berkman, he could be a Hall of Famer. It's insane. All right. Anyway, I'm getting a little off topic. But how do you think the ballot should be changed?
Well, I personally am a small hall guy. I prefer it to be a little bit less than, you know, what it is. And so everybody says that there's 10, you know, 10 guys, you know, you have 10 spots. It's almost kind of like you have to fulfill the 10 spots. What I would do is, as much as I liked the tracker and being able to follow and see what guys were voting, I kind of don't like it. Because if I'm looking at the tracker and I see Roy Halladay's at 95%. And I say, I have, you know, I can vote for Halladay, or I can vote to keep Andrew Jones on the ballot because I think he deserves a better
look. Yeah, he does.
If you think the guy's a Hall of Famer, vote for him. If you don't think he's a Hall of Famer, you know, but you want to keep him on, there's nothing, it doesn't matter if you're kept on. Who cares?
Well, see, that's a problem too, because let's say 10 guys, I guess this won't happen, but let's say guys are stacked up, you know, in this period where there's like 5 Hall of Famers stuck in one spot, but each year there's more and more guys who are getting, you know, put in, and you're like, oh, I have to vote for Jeter instead of, you know,
Jeter's going to get in, so why vote for him? You know,
yeah, exactly. That's what's so tough, because personally, if I was it, I would have it like this. You vote your 10 guys in, and then you have an extra 5 spots.
Well, I wouldn't vote 10. I think 10's too much.
You don't... Okay, but I think it needs to be 10, because let's say you have a year where there's 6 Hall of Famers coming out, retiring that year.
I don't think that,
like, let's say Ichiro. Because if Ichiro retires this season,
Ichiro does not play...
Let's say Ichiro
plays next year.
Yeah.
That's Miguel Cabrera's last year.
Yeah.
And that's Albert Pujols' last year.
Yeah.
So you got 3 guys on the ballot there. I don't think you're ever going to get more than 3 guys a year. I don't think... I just don't... You know, if you look at upcoming ballots, you got Jeter. The next year, you really don't have anybody. The year after, you got Ortiz. Year after that, you don't really know because people are still playing, of course.
But then mathematically, it doesn't make sense to me. For the guys like Bonds and Schilling and Sosa, not really Sosa, Bonds, Schilling, and I just don't know how they physically can't get in because there's literally no one else on the ballot to vote for. Who are you going to vote for? You're going to vote for Andrew Jones 10 times, and he's gonna end up getting in because people ended up voting for him instead of Bonds.
I have 10 votes. I want to vote for Andrew Jones. You know, my thing with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens is yesterday was a bad day. They only picked up 2%, whereas everybody else picked up a significant portion. Bonds and Clemens only pick up in new voters. They statistically do the best in new voters. And what that tells me is that I don't think they're going to get in. I don't think they're going to get in on the ballot because I don't think that they're going to make enough of a jump. I don't think that, you know, people who don't vote for them will
never
vote. They're
at 60%.
People who don't vote for them will never vote for them. People who vote for them will always vote for them.
How many votes is 15%?
Well, it's a lot.
It's like what,
Barry Bonds,
60?
Barry Bonds still needs to pick up about 60 to 70 votes.
That's a lot of votes. And
he only picked up 2% last year, this year, and he missed out by 79 votes last year. He picked up 2%, probably picked up about 10-ish votes. He's still off 70. I don't see where the 70 comes.
It's tough. But I think what's going to end up happening in the next 2-3 years, when they're on their final years of the ballot, is that they're going to end up being backlogged. Because the opposite of backlog. There's going to be no one going into the Hall of Fame that they're going to end up just being written on ballots.
So you think that people are just going to vote because they're going to vote?
Yeah. You have to vote.
You don't have to vote for anyone.
I know. But but like those guys, you know, Peter Gammons has a vote.
Also, I have a, you know, I don't think people, which is weird because I think this is one of the things that social media has done is I think we care, the fans, the people from the outside care more about than the people who really do it. I think I have
problems. Okay, that's partially true because there's a lot of writers in the baseball that are in the Baseball Writers Association and they don't even write about baseball most of the time. They write about football.
I have problems with the voters. I have some problems because
I don't think the fans should vote.
Fred McGriff, the people on the ballot, the people voting, I don't think they ever saw Fred McGriff play. I mean, I never really saw Fred McGriff.
I never either.
I just look at statistics. People who are voting saw Barry Bonds as 9-year-olds. And when a guy goes out and hits 70 homers and you're 9 and 10 years old, that's awesome. That's cool. However, you don't have a frame of reference. 70 homers, 60 homers is not something that happens.
It's
like, an anomaly.
Yeah, it is an anomaly. Even when Stanton hit 60 home runs.
The next year he hit 37.
Yeah. It's crazy how, you know, the game of baseball changes, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, I sit up there and I don't think it should be fan vote because there's so many stigmatisms towards players and stuff like that that aren't even, you know, people hate Schilling for being Schilling. They don't even hate him
because hate Schilling because he said he doesn't like the writers. John Heyman didn't vote for him because of what he said.
Really?
He said, I don't like the writers.
John Heyman
didn't vote for him.
Here's the way I look at it. The writer should be able to vote who's in. Or you scratch the writers and you get a veterans committee of old baseball players who are like old. They're not Hall of Famers.
So here's my problem with that.
They're not Hall of Famers.
They're not Hall
of Famers. They're people that are chosen from the hall that are well-rounded people and that they won't have a grudge versus someone.
So because check this out. On the Veterans Committee, there were 16 members. Baines got 12 votes, the minimum to get in. Four out of the 16 people, Tony La Russa, two ex-teammates, and his GM. I mean, we don't know who they voted for, who voted for Harold Baines. But when four people have those kinds of connections to him, and people like Harold Baines, they're gonna want to vote for him.
That's true. And that's what the problem is overall with these Hall of Fames?
I would say writers are pretty objective, except, you know, last year I was very intent. I was very closely watching because I wanted Vlad. Vlad was my guy. He was like the kid I grew up with. So I really wanted to, you know, I was looking at every ballot. If somebody didn't vote for Vlad, I was looking at why. And this writer from Cleveland voted for two guys last year. He voted for Tomey and Vizquel.
Oh.
That you should have your ballot taken away. You should have your ballot taken away.
He just voted for two people.
He voted for two people, Tomey and Vizquel. Both Indians.
That's wrong. Awful.
That's not doing your due diligence. I'm okay if you don't think Vlad's a Hall of Famer and you give me reasons why. And I'm, you know, but don't be an idiot.
That's what I hate about it too. But like, I think the reason why I think about changing the committee is because there's people like Tony Pena, who I just feel like are unbiased. I feel like they're people that are just smart with the game. They know baseball. Like Ron Washington could be on their veterans committee, I feel like. All these guys that I feel like are ex-coaches that know the game really well. You know, I don't think any other player could Joe Schmo vote. But yeah.
Now, that's our Hall of Fame thing. Going to get into one quick thing. I'm going to ask you two questions. I want you to answer them, and I'll give you what my response is. It is January 23rd. Where is Bryce Harper signing? And where is Manny Machado signing?
Harper, Phillies. Machado, I don't think he's going to sign with the White Sox. You know, Dan Lozano seemed really mad about those reports, which made me also believe, why would you be getting mad about reports about the White Sox? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like.
So where do you see? So where do you see him going?
I don't see him on the Yankees. I don't see him on the White Sox. I don't see him on the Phillies. I don't know where he's going. I really don't. Maybe a West Coast team? You know, maybe. I literally have no clue where Machado's going. I think Harper's going to Philly.
I agree. I think Harper's a Philly. I think it's just going to, you know, I think it's just going to come down to what is it? What is it going to be? Is it going to be the 10? Is it going to be a 1 year? Is it going to be a 5 year with an option after the second year? Manny Machado, I think, will be playing third base for the San Diego Padres.
Wow.
I think they'll break the bank. I think he'll say, I care about the bank. You're convincing me you have the best farm system in all of baseball. Let me take my chances in San Diego. I could be, other than Tony Gwynn and probably Trevor Hoffman, I could be Mr. Padre and win. They didn't win. They got to the game. They got to the series.
What are you saying? Win in five years?
I'm saying that there's a chance that Manny Machado accepts some patience. Eric Hosmer has a bounce back year. You keep Will Myers around and play
that
the outfield.
West is like.
But is it?
It's like.
The Giants are falling. The Diamondbacks are going to rebuild. The Rockies have maybe a year and then Arenado could leave. And the Dodgers are a pretty old roster trying to cling on to things. And I honestly haven't loved what I've seen from the Dodgers this offseason. They lost out on some guys like LeMahieu, Grandal.
They did lose out on
LeMahieu. I mean, there's talks that they could get Real Muto. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we got into a lot of baseball today. We're going to just briefly go into a little Super Bowl talk, Rams-Patriots. I'm just going to ask you, you know, next week we'll talk big about the Super Bowl. We'll probably do a show dedicated to mostly the Super Bowl as we get into Super Bowl week. Cameron, I'm going to ask you, where do you think this game could be won or lost from either side?
Okay. Pats will win this game, surely based off of the reason why they won the last, their offensive line. Brady got hit once, I think, that game. Once. And, you know, Brady is so quick with his hands that even when he is touched, the ball is pretty much out of his hands already. He's already thrown it away. He's so smart. I definitely think the Pats will win just because I think, you know, Chiefs defense really lacked. But I don't even think the Rams defense is, you know, I feel like they're a little bit past their prime. All those guys, Muhammad Sue, Aqib Talib, I think all those guys are kind of, you know, I just think the Patriots will win because Tom Brady finds ways to win. Last year was different. I think people underestimated how good the Eagles were. You know, definitely with Foles too. You know, yeah. They scored 38. That game was won 38-31. You know, Tom Brady had a good game that game.
I think that what the Eagles did last year is they had really good trenches. They had a really good offensive line and defensive line. And that can really do well, you know, as long as your skill players play well. I think this game will be won if the New England Patriots can stop Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh. If the Rams can do what they did against the Saints and stop a run game. You know, the Patriots kind of have what the Saints have in terms of like Ingram and Kamara, and you got Michelle and White. If they can stop the run game, I think it helps them. It really, you know, if you can make the Patriots a little bit more one-dimensional, I don't think you can beat the Patriots if they're two-dimensional. If you have Brady and a run game going,
yeah, like, it opens up like the first quarter.
It opens up the play action. It opens up all the throws in the book. You don't know what you're going to do because it allows you to run the ball in 3rd and 6, 3rd and 5. So the defense has to play that, and then you have the greatest, you know, Super Bowl quarterback, the greatest quarterback ever, lighting you up. If they can stop the run game, it gives them a really good chance to win that game.
You know what I think wins this game too? Whoever wins the first coin toss. Because I know Brady likes going down the field, attacking first, getting a score.
The Patriots, I think, always defer. No. I think Belichick is the guy who started the deferral. He defers. But that's our
either problem. Either way, yeah. whoever wins this game, like you said, in the trenches will win.
All right, that's our podcast for the week. Next week, we'll dive into really a lot of football. Basketball, we'll definitely get into. You know, the season's picking up. But today was a little special because of yesterday and the Hall of Fame announcement. Want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.